You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Our passage today is part of the run-up to two classic Bible stories, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego surviving the fiery furnace, and Daniel surviving the lion's den. Both incidents occurring because the main Jewish characters were being punished for refusing to bow down and worship a god other than Yahweh. To be clear, none of these stories ever happened. They are allegories written by a second century author, encouraging his contemporaries to stay strong in their faith, despite being oppressed by the evil Greek king Antiochus V Epiphanes. But in order to not be punished himself, the author of Daniel set the stories 400 years beforehand when the Jews were in captivity in Babylon. That way, if he was ever accused of criticizing the king that he was indeed denouncing, there was plausible deniability. No, I'm not criticizing his eminence Antiochus. This is a story about something that took place a long time ago. For comparison, think about Arthur Miller's play, The Crucible. Miller wrote the play as an allegory condemning McCarthyism and its persecution of people accused of being communists. But he set it 300 years earlier during the Salem witch trials, so he could say, no, I'm not criticizing the House Committee on Un-American Activities. This is a story about something that took place a long time ago. So, today's story is set in Babylon when the Jews first arrive in exile. The Babylonians kidnapped only the most skilled Jews, so the next priority was to assimilate them into Babylonian culture and put them to work. So, because names are important, the first thing the Babylonians did was to strip them of their Jewish names and give them names honoring Babylonian deities. For those of us who don't speak Hebrew, this whole aspect of the story can be totally missed. But once you know to look, it becomes really obvious. Daniel, or God is my judge, was renamed Belteshazzar, protect the king. Hananiah, Yahweh is gracious, to Shadrach, by the command of the moon god. Mishael, who is better than Yahweh, became Meshach, who is better than Aku, the moon god. Azariah, Yahweh has helped, became Abednego, servant of Nebo, the god of wisdom. So, when you hear the passage read today, be sure to pay attention. Remember that names are important, and know that just like in the ancient world, names today are still used as political propaganda.
Our words of wisdom are from Daniel chapter 1, verses 3 through 4 and 5b through 7. Then King Nebuchadnezzar ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring into the king's service some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace.
He was to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that they were to enter the king's service.
Among those who were chosen were some from Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah.
The chief official gave them new names, to Daniel, the name of Belteshazzar, to Hananiah, Shadrach, to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
I am going into this message assuming two things. Number one, that none of you have named your children Satan, Hitler, or Typhoid Mary. Why? Because you know that names have meaning. Names carry with them an unspoken endorsement of someone, honors someone, or has an aspirational element to them. Nat and I went to a comedy show a couple of weeks ago, and one of the comedians was talking about having named his son Maximum Chaos Steinberg. That's his real given name. Now that's planning ahead. The second thing I'm assuming is that as a follower of Jesus, you want to promote and live out the values that Jesus taught and lived. Radical acceptance, respect, unconditional love, care for the widow, the orphan, and the stranger. Yes? Well, let's explore the name aspect first. The Bible is full of intentional name changes, usually to establish a character's new identity or life's trajectory. For obvious storyline reasons, God changed Abram's name, meaning High Father, to Abraham, meaning Father of a Multitude, and changed Sarai, meaning My Princess, to Sarah, meaning Mother of Nations. For his new role, Jacob, which means supplanter or overreacher, absolutely needed a more respectable name. And that's why he was renamed Israel, meaning having power with God. Again, if you pay attention to the meaning of names in Hebrew, you know from the beginning that things are not likely to work out well for Ruth's sons, Mahlon and Chilion, which mean sickness and wasting. "Hi," says Chilion to a prospective date, "my name is Wasting. So nice to meet you," as she steps away, right? So in the New Testament, Jesus changed Simon's name, which means God has heard, to Peter, meaning rock. And for obvious political reasons, the very Jewish Saul was changed to the very Greek Paul. Our names are an incredibly important part of our identity. They carry deep personal, cultural, familial, and historical connections. They can give us a sense of who we are, where we come from, the community to which we belong, and our place in the world. Some of you know that when Catholics are confirmed, they often take on the name of a particular saint who they aspire to be like. Navajos are given a secret name that is only known to family members and used in sacred rituals. When the Fountains was first started, the founding leadership demonstrated a staggering lack of imagination in chartering us as First United Methodist Church of Fountain Hills. Like, there were going to be other United Methodist churches in Fountain Hills. It took the visionary leadership of Reverend Ed Grant to say, you know, names do have meaning, and we can do better than First United Methodist. So, why does any of this matter? Because in recent years, people are arguing more about names. Some of you may remember the resistance to changing the name of the predominant peak in Central Phoenix. For years, Native Americans had objected to the name as being a derogatory name for women. Think the C word. It was eventually changed to Piestewa Peak in honor of Laurie Ann Piestewa, the first Native American woman to die in combat in the U.S. military. Why change? Because names matter. Not just our names, but what we agree to name places carry deep cultural and historical connections. They give us a sense of who we are and our values as a community. And as the Babylonians knew well, giving people or places certain names can be used to intimidate and threaten people. That's why, as we celebrate the 4th of July this weekend, I wanted to put in a good word for the work of what's called the Naming Commission, the group created by Congress to oversee the removal of Confederate names from our Army bases. And no, this is not political. It comes from my conviction as a follower of Jesus, who is moved to call out injustice, racism, and intimidation when I see it. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said that the whole point of new names is to reflect the courage, values, sacrifices, and diversity of our military men and women. And as a follower of Jesus, I would advocate for names that don't glorify those who, for their own benefit, actively worked to enslave, oppress, and kill other human beings. After receiving more than 34,000 suggestions, the Naming Commission whittled those down to 87 potential names. And today, I'd like to share a quick overview of just four of the new names. And I encourage you to check out the rest of the names and backgrounds at thenamingcommission.gov. Amazing stories. First, let's look at Fort Benning on the Georgia-Alabama border. It was named not in the aftermath of the Civil War as a gesture of national reconciliation. No, it was named in 1918. This is an important date to remember because it was just 3 years earlier in 1915 when the Ku Klux Klan was reestablished with a vengeance just a few miles away on Stone Mountain, Georgia. Confederate General Henry L. Benning was an ardent secessionist who bitterly opposed abolition and the emancipation of slaves. Benning stated that he would rather be stricken with illness and starvation than see African Americans liberated from slavery and be given equality as citizens. And he didn't use the words African Americans. In his place, the fort will be named for Hal and Julia Moore. Hal was a Vietnam veteran who oversaw and led the post-war transition to the all-volunteer armed forces the U.S. still maintains. He worked to stem racial conflict, to reduce drug abuse among soldiers, and served as deputy chief of staff for Army personnel. His wife, Julia, worked with the American Red Cross and advocated for increased support for military families, including childcare and other quality of life initiatives. Fort Bragg was also named in 1918, very possibly under the influence of the newly energized Klan. General Braxton Bragg was generally considered to be among the worst generals of the Civil War. Most of the battles he engaged in ended in defeat. He was extremely unpopular with both the officers and men under his command. Historians agree that the losses suffered by Bragg's forces were particularly significant in bringing about the defeat of the Confederacy. Oh, now there's somebody to emulate, right? Fort Bragg will be renamed Fort Liberty. Fort A.P. Hill was named in 1941 for a Confederate general historians consider to be a prime example of the Peter Principle. Although successful early on, he had a reputation for being so high-strung before battle that he would become unwell. He suffered with such severe symptoms of various venereal diseases as to sometimes become totally incapacitated, which makes the choice for a person to be honored in his place all the more appropriate. Fort A.P. Hill will be renamed in honor of Dr. Mary Edwards Walker, who in 1863 became the first female surgeon in Army history. During the early years of the war, Walker attempted to enlist several times as a surgeon, but was refused because she was a woman. So she volunteered. Her work treating wounded soldiers in field hospitals near the front lines did not go unnoticed. Eventually, She was put on the official staff, and in recommending her for the Medal of Honor after the war, General William Tecumseh Sherman said, "She devoted herself with much patriotic zeal to the sick and wounded soldiers, both in the field and hospitals, to the detriment of her own health." Proud of her service and committed to the causes of equality for which she served, Dr. Walker continued to wear her medal every day, including through 50 years of campaigning for women's equality and women's rights. Often arrested for her reformist ways, she told the court on one occasion that she would forever defend her right to dress as I please in free America, on whose tented fields I have served for 4 years in the cause of human freedom. Now that's somebody to name a fort after. Finally, Fort Polk, Louisiana, will be changed to Fort Johnson. Originally named for the first bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Louisiana, Leonidas Polk, this pro-slavery bishop broke away to form a new denomination that would uphold slavery, the Protestant Episcopal Church of the Confederate States of America. Polk was the largest slaveholder in his county, was known for his bitter disagreements with other generals, and overall is remembered for his sweeping lack of success in combat. He was killed in 1864. Sergeant William Henry Johnson, on the other hand, was a genuine hero, being one of the very first Americans to see action in World War I. Having signed up to serve in the segregated armed forces, Johnson and other black soldiers were transported separately and arrived in France before any of the white Americans. Standing guard duty at 2 a.m., Johnson heard wires being snipped right before a German raiding party attacked his position. With his comrade incapacitated and wounded himself, he could have surrendered, but chose to fight. Sounding the alarm, he threw grenades until his supply was exhausted. He fired his rifle until he was out of ammunition, and then he charged the enemy, swinging his rifle like a club. When he saw his wounded comrade being dragged away for interrogation, Johnson abandoned his rifle and drew his Bowie knife, fighting off the raiders at close quarters. In the end, Johnson had single-handedly engaged 2 dozen men that night, killing at least 4 and wounding many of the rest. The United States' first hero of the Great War, Johnson was the first American soldier to ever receive the French Croix de Guerre. Dying destitute in obscurity in 1926, a victim of Jim Crow discrimination, he was forgotten for most of the 20th century. Then in 1996, he was posthumously awarded the Purple Heart. And then in 2002, the Distinguished Service Cross. In 2015, he was awarded the Medal of Honor. Look, if you disagree with this move to change the names of these bases, I don't know what to tell you. The argument that they were named to recognize men who were worthy of recognition just doesn't hold water. Under the influence of the Ku Klux Klan, a known terrorist organization, they were named in the 20th century as a way of honoring a racist, immoral cause. Some complain, well, what's next? Will we tear down the memorials to Washington and Jefferson because they owned slaves? Apples and oranges, friends. Their careers were not built on fighting for the right to own slaves. Washington and Jefferson are honored despite the hypocritical aspects of their stories, not because they fought to defend their hypocritical actions. The bottom line, these forts were named in the Jim Crow era in an effort to intimidate minorities and promote white supremacy. Navy Admiral Michelle Howard, the chair of the Naming Commission, says the committee sought to inspire today's soldiers and the local communities with names or values that have meaning and embody the best of America. Jim Crow, intimidation, and white supremacy are not the best of America. The generals for whom these bases are named are irredeemable, plain and simple. And I would hope, as followers of Jesus, that we can get behind not only the Army's efforts to make things right, but to make things right in our own neighborhoods. Like in Tempe, just last week, three schools in Tempe are being renamed because the men for whom they were originally named were members of the Ku Klux Klan. The Tempe Public School website says that the local Tempe chapter of the KKK focused specifically on anti-Catholic activity, specifically against Catholic teachers in the public schools. The new names for the schools were chosen to honor longtime educators in the Tempe area. As Amanda Gorman reminded us in our litany this morning, we will not march back to what was, but move to what shall be. A country that is bruised but whole, benevolent but bold, fierce and free. We will not be turned around or interrupted by intimidation. And as followers of Jesus, that just might mean that we upset some people along the way. But as Jackie Robinson said back in 1954, I'm not concerned with your liking or disliking me. All I ask is that you respect me as a human being. The Confederate generals for whom these forts are currently named are not worthy of the honor. The very act of naming these forts after them was Babylonian-style propaganda. Let's name these forts after men who not only fought against the United States, but who had contempt for our core values of equality and justice for all. The time has long since passed for us to commit them to oblivion. And you know who agrees with me? Robert E. Lee. When asked to attend a meeting concerning monuments honoring the Confederacy, Lee replied, "I think it wiser not to keep open the sores of war, but to follow the example of those nations who endeavored to obliterate the marks of civil strife, to commit to oblivion the feelings engendered." On this 4th of July, let's remember those who have moved our country ahead and pledge to leave behind a country better than the one we were left with. Be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.wepuTloveFirst.org.